This is the Friends of History Debating Society. We're in Londinium, Germanicus and Gaius and our centurion friends and the wine steward. And we're having a conversation about the American way of war. And Germanicus mentions a recent development in the contest between Beijing, the Forbidden City, and the Beltway, Washington. In the meeting in Beijing, in a forest of ancient trees, I was amused, Germanicus, that the American desk in Beijing did not pick up on the frightful image of Winnie the Pooh in the 100-acre forest. I leave it alone. However, it was Xi Jinping to say out loud for the president to hear and everybody to hear in the notes by the journalists, I don't think we have a Thucydides trap. Then Mr. Trump, the imperator, said, neither do I. What is this Thucydides trap? Herodotus, born in Anatolia at the beginning of the 5th century BCE. Thucydides, born in the middle of the century, a generation younger, maybe even two generations younger than Herodotus. And then Xenophon. These are the three great historians of the 5th century and 4th century BCE. That's the battle between Sparta and Persia. Sparta emerges as the hero because of Thermopylae. The battle between Sparta and Athens, the Delian League, which was the Athenian Empire. And Athens wins that, except then one more coda, a man named Lysander from Sparta, defeats the Athenians. And the Spartans turn out to be just as brutal and presumptive and dictatorial as the Athenians. Everybody goes, hey, we switched one bully for another bully. So they go to Thebes, and the Thebans, as Michael just said, defeat Sparta. Okay. Thucydides' trap was in between. The idea here is that, and it's a modern invention, it's not ancient. The idea here is that Thucydides said the rising power will defeat the known superpower. And it's interpreted to mean that the People's Republic of China is the rising power. And it's inevitable that it will defeat the superpower, which is the United States. So war is in the cards. However, consulting with my classicist, who was my colleague in this conversation, his name is Andrew Bayliss. He's an Australian, but he's teaching at the University of Birmingham, head of the classics department. Thucydides didn't say it was inevitable. And what we're dealing with here is important to note. The reason that they went to war, understood by the contemporaries and 2,500 years of historians ever since, is that Pericles baited Sparta. That's it. Pericles, who was the caudillo of Sparta, of Athens, you know, Athens, big democracy, right? They had a dictator. His name was Pericles. He was a cultured man. He was suspect of stealing money to build monuments to himself. Sound familiar, Germanicus? In any event, he baited Sparta by saying, all right, you have to allow us to enter your city. All right, you have to surrender this or that. And Sparta, he knew that Sparta couldn't do that. It would have to go to war. As Germanicus says, there are things that we can't tolerate. And we fight for meaning. We don't fight to win. We fight for meaning. That war was triggered by Pericles, not by the inevitability of history. And the classicist I talked to yesterday, Andrew Bailey, agrees that it's not in Thucydides' language. He doesn't say it's inevitable. So we've been dealing with a false premise. Germanicus, we'll keep this a secret to ourselves and our centurions.
I've tried to disseminate the secret, because I find Graham Allison, who invented the Thucydides trap, to be a sleight of hand magician inventing something out of, as it were, whole cloth. And it's false. And I wrote a piece on it several years ago for American Conservative. Thucydides was not writing a history. He was writing a great work of literature, mm-hmm. with himself as the chorus. So he, a minor general who didn't do that well in the war, could take on, appropriate, the overarching voice of the entire chronicle by being its chorus and presenting it. And he wanted to make the war as grand as conceivably possible. That meant trying to make the Peloponnesian War as close to and as earth-shaking an event as the Iliad. He wanted to frame it as a modern Iliad. And of course, the war lasted more than 20 years with a break in between. And it seemed grand because it encompassed most of the Greek world. And yet, the reality is that as Thucydides averred, it was not inevitable, and it was really not as grand as it's portrayed, in large part because Sparta won by bringing in the superpower, Persia.
They made a deal, isn't it? Don't you love this, Germanicus? They cut a deal. Money was changing hands.
And, you know, it was the war happened in ways that were not inevitable, but it was Graham Allison's desire to create something that looked, like I was saying earlier, scientific. Oh, in two-thirds of the cases that we studied, when the newcomer rival grew too powerful, there was a war between them. And that's just really not very helpful. I mean, there is no basis for war between the United States and China. The United States would have to have a president like Pericles who baited China. And although Trump was inclined to do so in his first term and then coming into office again, has been chastened by the very thing we've been talking about, the decline and fall of the American way of war. And now that is not in the cards. But what's funny, or I should say ironic, about Graham Allison's deceitful invention.
Clever. Let's just say he's clever. He got a lot of press out of it.
Oh, yeah. He is clever because he presented something that's so infinitely simplistic and so easily axiomatic and reflexive. And
it's not
anyone can memorize the term and then introduce it or drop it into a dinner party and seem like he's very knowledgeable. And the thing I don't like about it is that it creates a self-fulfilling prophecy that doesn't exist. It's not scientific. In fact, Graham Allison invented something that was essentially literary. So he was doing the same thing using Thucydides that Thucydides was doing, trying to use the war to create his own grand opera. These are literary inventions.
The other detail that I enjoy about this tangle between Sparta and Athens is that Athens was a sea power, a vast sea power, and never really lost that reputation. There were moments where it made mistakes against Sparta, for example, because Sparta took Persian money and Persian fleets. However, Athens stayed a sea power, and Sparta was only ever a land power when it could field an army. And I've mentioned the mothers weeping when their sons survived that battle, and I've mentioned how Thebes and Athens felt they didn't have to cross the river. Sparta was beaten, and that was it for Sparta.
That was their last hurrah.
Yeah, 371, that's the end of Sparta as anything but this great story of Thermopylae, which, by the way, leaves out all the allies who fought with them. They had great PR, Germanicus. But in any event, we come down to the final act here. Sparta shoved aside in Athens supreme because of Persian money and Theban warfare. And after that, it's celebrated as if Athens is redeemed in some fashion. Athens was not redeemed. It was the Thebans who were always going to be successful. The Thebans defeated Sparta. And I don't know that we have a Theban today, even if we wanted to believe one. I guess we're our own Thebes. America is. We're Athens, we're Thebes. And when you go to, and when you actually look at Athens under Pericles, where's the democracy, Germanicus? Who defines that as democracy?
Well, I mean, we have our own wannabe Pericles,
yeah,
who constantly invoke our democracy, as Kamala Harris or Nancy Pelosi is wont to do. And of course, it's not our democracy, it's their democracy, which, if properly enacted, according to people like Chuck Schumer and others, would be no different from the kind of grip on Athens that Pericles had as a dictator.
And then they invented, oh, I mean, it just happened. I just leave it alone. I leave it alone. It's okay that Thucydides' trap is popular. It's okay. It's entertaining. I'm presuming that somebody has told Xi and somebody has told Trump. I'm presuming that. I don't know. They were right when they said it doesn't work. I have one more thought for you today, and we'll turn to it right away, which is Persia. People understand Persia today as Iran, but it's the same country. It's the same mountains. It's the same Tehran, the same people. And they were right there present in Greece in all the stories. 2,500 years accounts for something, Germanicus. It's almost as if it's being ignored that the imperator and his PR men have taken on an empire that has lasted much longer. Can we name another one besides the Romans that have lasted this long? I can.
Well, China had many dynasties with many interregnums, so it's always been there, though. So
I'll go along with that, even though they have the century of shame. They have lasted. So China, Persia, and Rome being passed to the British and then passed to us. The three are, in other words, the Chinese were not participating in the battle in the Aegean. They were not present. They had their own battles. In any event, I want to turn to the Persians and their purse and how they played off the Greek city-states, because we could see them, China's purse, Persia's purse trading right now. We'll talk about Straits of Hormuz when we come back. Orchestra, please give us a break.